Infinite Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Infinite Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. In fact, I should say, not just ladies and gentlemen, but also kids. I'm sure there's some youngsters listening to this show, and since we don't swear, it is rated, what do we rate this show? I guess we rate it G for good. Anyway, so nice to have you here with us. We have our regular Friday night guest up in a moment. Over the past few months, actually, we've been talking about some things a bit more outside the box, some things that cause you to expand your thinking and thereby expanding your consciousness into areas where you have never been. I'm not a big Star Trek fan. I've watched a few episodes over the years, and I don't find fault in anyone that particularly cares for Star Trek, just like I like to eat organic foods. Some people like to eat at fast food restaurants. The point here being that there's a lot going on with outer space. There's a lot going on with our planet. And what we get represented through the media has a tendency to shape our perceptions of what's going on in the planet. In fact, when you're watching fantasy in a movie or on a TV show, you get used to, let's say, the images they want you to see, the concepts they want you to see. You don't just see a flying saucer, you see these big control centers with all kinds of monitors, flashing lights, and you see high technology. You see the transport beam moving a person from one place to another. Beam me up, Scotty. You see the human side of these people to sort of ground you to your human emotions while you're seeing all these images of space. And so you're really having one or more realities created for you that go beyond your everyday experiences. And because it's on TV or because it's in a movie, you're led to believe, there's that word believe, that you are seeing fantasy. And often what you are seeing is very carefully orchestrated and with a purpose for you to be thinking along certain lines and in certain directions so that when something happens, you react. And the reaction has been measured thousands, even millions of times in various parts of the planet over thousands and thousands of years. It's been monitored. And little by little, we become totally oblivious to what's going on around us, and we only respond to these entertainment stimuli that we get from the media. Now, I'm not even talking about the news shows here. That's another matter. But I'm talking about the presentation of history in the form of a movie, the presentation of science in the form of a movie, and the presentation of even religion and religious concepts or certain things that border on consciousness, but always treat it that this is just illusion, this is just fantasy, because you're seeing it in a movie. And so with tonight's guest, we're going to talk about not so much the illusion, but who is behind the illusion. And with that, I want to welcome our regular Friday night guest. He is a scientist, inventor, author, teacher, and lecturer, not necessarily in that order, and he's also our honorary science consultant on Evident Footprints. And really, in a way, becoming that with BBS Radio as well, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. It's always good to be here. How are you tonight?
I'm excellent. I'm very anxious to cover the topic we decided we were going to talk about tonight.
Well, and, let's dive right into it then.
Okay. You have at it.
It's interesting that you start off with the phraseology of investigating what is behind the illusion. And it's interesting, too, because that's exactly where I wanted to start. But let me give a little preamble about that, just so that people understand where I'm coming from. I think my first exposure to that type of thing came when I was a pretty young boy. Because for me, Halloween was always a special occasion. And I think that was partially due to my dad, who made a big deal out of it. And one of our favorite things was to have him read the Legend of Sleepy Hollow, with Ichabod Crane and all those characters, written, of course, by Washington Irving. It's a really terrific story. And interestingly enough, I found out later on that it's well-founded in truth. And when I got older, I used to go up to Sleepy Hollow and actually go through the graveyards up there, and you could find the names of the people that were in the stories, which was really, really cool. And that was the beginning of a trend in my life that's been quite persistent. Now, when I was a little bit older, I don't know how it was in Ohio, but in New Jersey, where I grew up, they started to show the horror movies from the 1920s and the 1930s on late-night television. And I was just blown away by that stuff at that age, and used to watch all of those things. I don't know if you ever did that yourself, Don.
Yes. Yes,
well, I found them pretty exciting.
In fact, the original Dracula that they had created, you know, there was one, and I don't know the name of the actor, or at least if I ever did, I forgot the name, but he was bald-headed and had rather elf-like ears, you know.
That's called Nosferatu, and the actor's name I don't remember, but I know he was German.
That was a silent
movie.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And he was a pretty scary-looking dude, even for those days. I mean, the makeup, you wonder how much of it was makeup and how much of it was real. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I remember the image very, very clearly. I wouldn't want to run into him in a dark alley, that's for sure. But anyway, there were some things that fascinated me completely in those horror movies. And I guess we could boil it down to three topics in particular. The Frankenstein story was always fantastic for me, and I think probably a lot of that had to do with the high-voltage equipment and all of that stuff that was used to energize the monster. But the werewolves and wolfmen and all of that kind of shenanigans really found a special place in my interest for some reason, and so did vampires. So out of all of the different horror movies that were out there in those days, those three things struck some kind of a chord with me. And by the time I got to be a teenager, the curiosity for those things kept on persisting, and I actually found out, after investigating to some extent, that, as so often is the case, those stories were based on a glimmer of reality. Now, I don't remember who the person was that the Frankenstein story is based on, but apparently Mary Shelley was aware of the guy who was very wealthy, had a castle someplace, and one of the more distant areas of Germany, and he was experimenting with electricity and its effects on dead bodies, assuming that there was some voltage or some frequency or whatever that might be able to induce life. Now, he may not have accomplished his goal, but it was the nucleus of an interesting story. So there again, we have something that's embedded in fact. You're mm-hmm. familiar with, are you familiar with that, Don, or were you not aware of that?
Oh, no, I am. In fact, just as a side commentary here for a moment, you know, we're talking about movies all designed to produce fear in the viewer. And it should raise the question, why did they settle on fear? What is it about fear that is so important that has to be the undercurrent, the underlying tone, so to speak, or the vibrational frequency of these movies? And there's a story being told that seems to have, and you're going to point that out, seems to have a parallel in reality. And yet when you talk about the reality, it's a no-no. Basically, you know, we're forbidden or we're discouraged from talking about these things openly, yet we're to accept it as fantasy. Sort of a twist of the truth, the reverse. It's as if we're accepting the lie.
Well, we've been pretty well trained to do that.
If you get the meaning. In other words, you know, all these movies, whether it's Frankenstein or Dracula or The Wolfman or King Kong or Mighty Joe Young, any of these movies play on fear. They all play on fear. Who is the fear serving? That's the question. Ultimately, who is the fear serving? So I will turn it back over to you, sir. I just wanted to make that side comment.
Well, I'm sure that we can explore that in more depth, but as long as you brought it up, I think that the thing that we should keep in mind when it comes to fear is that it is one very direct source of stimulation that is responsible for the release of huge amounts of adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
And adrenaline is a fantastic hormone which has enormous effects on the human body. So bearing that in mind, we'll address that in more detail in a moment, but I just want to touch on two more things here. The werewolf legend has actually got two components to it that I've been able to find. The American Indians, for instance, were very taken up with the art of shape-shifting. And what's interesting about it is it's Hollywood, I think, glamorized the idea, but in reality what they do, this is what I've gotten from Native American folks, the ability to project your consciousness into an animal to experience life at his level and thereby learn something really important from that. But, of course, the opposite is more attractive, and that is that an animal's consciousness comes into a human being and now he becomes a monster. So that makes for a better fuel for a horror movie. The European aspect of the werewolf legend is a little bit more dramatic, and that's when a person literally undergoes a transformation and becomes some other thing, which is a combination of a beast and a man. And interestingly enough, that concept can be traced back all the way to Atlantis, where they actually experimented with stuff like that, and we've covered that on other shows.
Mm-hmm.
The vampire legend is a lot more complicated, but interestingly enough, it has a lot more feeding into it from the annals of history. For instance, there was a guy that the Dracula legend is modeled after, and I don't know if a lot of people know that or not, but actually he was the Prince of Moldavia, or is it pronounced Moldavia? I forget.
Well, there's different pronunciations. Some say Moldavia, some say Moldavia. Depends what part of the country you're from, I guess.
Okay. Well, for those folks from the region where they discuss it as Moldavia, they had a prince there that, well, actually, there was a father and son team that were of royal descent and very, very much in love with their countries and totally livid over the invasion of the Turks. I don't know when this happened, but I think it was in the 1650s, if I remember correctly. And they treated them with absolute brutality, which was the only thing that these people understood when they were warring in that fashion. But the interesting thing is it saved their country. But the brutality went down in history, and the father's name, the family name was Teps, and the father's name was Vlad Teps, and I think that the son took the same name. But the interesting thing was the local folks referred to the father as Drahul, which means the dragon. And then the son, who was even worse than the father, was referred to as Dracula. And when Brad Stoker heard about this legend, you know, he went and investigated these people and found that they were extremely bloodthirsty individuals. But he disregarded the fact that they were primarily defending their country and wove it into the vampire legend that we know today by adding in other features. So it's very fascinating to find out that there's an awful lot of this so-called horror stuff which is based on something real. And this brings us to one other interesting thing, and that is that we have certain images of Satan depicted as an individual with scaly skin, animalistic eyes, pointed ears, horns, you know, talons for hands, and usually some sort of a pointed tail. And that begins to make you wonder if all these things are based on something real, even the Satan legend or the devils or demons or whatever you want to call them, could they be based on something real? Now, we had talked about that in the past, Don. You want to make an interjection here before I go any further? Or?
Yeah, I'll make a couple of quick points here. I had the opportunity some years back to work with a guy from Romania, and somehow we were talking about the concept of taxes and how whole countries are taxed, and depending on where you're from, taxes are quite a bit different. Well, the legend of Count Dracula, according to this man, was really patterned after an individual who was a lord in Romania, and he went around collecting taxes. And to the people, their money was their blood. You know, their work and the fruits of their labor was considered their blood. So when he was taking the money from them in the form of what was being called taxes, it was as if he was taking their life's blood. But I see a parallel to that. In fact, now in relation to your comment about the wolf, what comes through to me is that we have nature spirits, and you and I have discussed this very recently, even the manifestations that are visible in certain types of extremely negative energy fields. And we're talking about where there's destruction and darkness and fear and death and maybe some things that we don't even tune into that are making the whole thing work as it does. And someone who's sensitive will feel something more than the average person that's just watching this and being consumed by their fear. I'm not saying these things can't be frightening. They're very tragic. 9/11 was a very tragic event. But when you see the same entities around a flying saucer, and we're not even going to dispute whether or not flying saucers are real, you know, I think society is pretty much beyond that illusion. And they've seen, many people have seen them. But what they we're coming to understand is that these entities also appear near those craft. So, is there an extraterrestrial influence? Is there a satanic influence? Is there an extraterrestrial and satanic influence simultaneously? I think it's a combination of both, actually. And so the nature spirit, or the animal that would be affected, would be the most frightening animal. A wolf is a very shy animal in everyday experience. If you go out into the woods and you see a wolf and it sees you, likely it's going to run. You make a loud noise. Now, if it's a pack of wolves, it might be a different thing. If it's a starving wolf, it's going to be a bit braver because it's going to be thinking of its hunger first. And the fear factor is going to be put on the back burner for the moment, unless you give that animal a reason to again move into fear. So what seems like a legend or a fantasy or an illusion could be a very real manifestation of an animal possession, if you want to call it that. Just like a person could be possessed by a demonic spirit or numerous demons. And the concept of biting and living through it, or gaining some sort of longevity through it, I think is symbolic of the bloodlines and the DNA. More than anything, that's worked into the story, sort of to enhance the fear. Oh, if I get bitten, I can turn into that, and I'm trapped in this reality for eternity. That concept that creates fear with a lot of people, and then Dracula, being a being that can live for so long, thousands of years, is that mirroring another entity in reality? Is it mirroring someone that actually drinks the blood of humans? We have plenty of accounts of the rituals that are going on with these secret societies, and it's mirrored in these stories. And because we see it in the movies, we think, well, it's a fantasy, so this Bohemian Grove can't be for real. Or any of the other, you know, the dungeons of the Vatican, the things that are going on there, they can't be sacrificing children down there. Well, the Bible even speaks of sacrifice. So if it's okay for it to be in the Bible, why are we not allowed to speak about it? Or why are we not permitted to consider that this might be the reality? So that's my comment.
Well, it only brings us right to where we wanted to be anyway. My next comment was going to be, with particular reference to the attributes of the creature we define as Satan and the traits of vampires and werewolves. First of all, you've got this ability for shape-shifting. You've got this predatory nature where both the werewolf and the vampire prey upon people. The vampire drinks the blood and usually leaves its victim alive, at least half alive, so that it can join the flock, so to speak. The werewolf is a little bit more greedy. He tears a person to pieces and eats the flesh, but if the person should survive it, then he becomes one of the gang. Well, and of course, then we have Satan, who is a very vivid character in a lot of religious theologies. And the real question is, are there really three different things, or are we talking about one being in particular that's showing up in different ways in different stories? And if so, what is it really based on? You know, following back through the legend, we find some similarities that are pretty interesting. A lot of these descriptions have things in common, like, for instance, vampires and werewolves have exaggerated fangs. Werewolves have talons or claws for their hands. And of course, the skin of the creature known as Satan or the demon is often represented in a reptilian fashion with scales. So the common denominator in a lot of this seems to be something reptilian in nature. Don't you think, Don?
Absolutely. I'm inclined to agree. And the reptilians are known to be shapeshifters with a profound understanding for the mechanics of DNA.
Well, I think if we're gonna take this leap, we might as well acknowledge the fact that for those members of the audience who may not know that there are beings from other worlds who have been seen in association with various landings and other extraterrestrial activities that are known as reptilians. And isn't that what you're getting at, Don?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you brought the word up first. I was leading us there. So, yes, but, you know, the reptiles, even back in the days of Egypt, were worshipped. The Nile River was a refuge for the reptilians. And there was a very unusual characteristic that they could enter the water and then enter underground. They could live underground. And this was actually knowledge, or the higher knowledge gained from those reptilians by the Egyptians, was allegedly stolen by the people that ended up finally in Israel. The alchemy and the esoteric knowledge gained, because it was just available to the Pharaoh at the time. And you know, it branches off into white gold, and I don't mean to go off on a tangent, but they were worshipped back in Egyptian times. One wonders why there is so much unrest in the Middle East for so many thousands of years, and what relationship it might have with the Egyptians, or the original Israelis, the people that fled Egypt. So, yes, I'm saying reptilians.
Well, you brought up a whole mess of stuff that we could actually explore in detail in many shows, to be honest with you. But the interesting thing that you touched on there, which happens to be an area of my own personal interest quite intently, is, of course, the alchemical and the higher technological knowledge, which we know for a fact was possessed by the early Egyptian dynasties, and most probably was brought out of Egypt by the Israelis during the Exodus.
Yes.
And has remained, you might say, in the confines of secret organizations around the world ever since. And every once in a while you'll get an individual that has enough of this knowledge to do something worthwhile with it. But basically we have to ask the question, where does the alchemy come from? Where does the higher understanding of science come from in that period of time, when all of our historians tell us that the actual inhabitants of Earth were quite primitive by most standards, if they didn't come from an extraterrestrial influence? And if they did, then it's very interesting to find out that the religious organizations have somehow, or at least certain churches, have somehow carried on this concept of the reptilian and the fear factor, but they have woven it into, you know, the concept of demons and devils. well, the interesting thing is, what if it's based on these real creatures? If they can live for thousands of years, as legends suggest, then what is to say that actually the other things which are inferred by religious teachings might not also be true? And that is that Satan has a stranglehold on this planet, you know, that this is actually Satan's domain, and that they influence all of the negative experiences which happen on the planet. Well, people have a tendency to, interpret those things literally by way of the teachings that they have been given, and they're thinking about some dark-natured spiritual beings that have a tendency to coax us into sin, as it were. But what if we take it literally? What if we say that, yeah, that's one possible interpretation, but suppose there are beings here which actually exist behind the scenes and use various organizations to exert their will on the people for their own benefits? You know, what if Earth is a colony of the reptilians? And the people that are here, supposedly in charge, are in fact being manipulated by these people. That's something I know you know a lot about, Don.
Yes, if you want to comment on that, from me, I mean, I would say that this has been going on pretty much since the Earth has existed. I think when the Earth was created, and we're speaking billions of years ago, this concept that life didn't exist. I mean, when you look at the consciousness of the average person, they think life began with the birth of Jesus. And that, we know life went back before that, and you hear all of these ridiculous statements. Well, the pyramids were built 2,000 years B.C. So there were, there were people there 2,000 years B.C., and then some archaeologist discovers some bones, and then they say, well, these people go back 50 million years. So where is the history? Why are we not being shown the history? Well, they didn't keep good records in those days. Well, let me tell you, in 2008, they don't keep good records either, when it's convenient to do so. So that story washes out, too. That story doesn't hold a lot of water. So, if you are considering the fact that Earth at one time was a beautiful planet and pristine and healthy and vibrant, and it was a way station, or it was a place in let's say a state of virginity to some level, and it could be easily plundered and overtaken by those that had a little bit more knowledge about these spiritual principles or even scientific principles, and couple that with the negativity of Satan or a demon, you are going to all of a sudden experience a gradual shift in the balance of those energies from very positive to very negative, even though we would all probably agree that the universe was created to have a balance of those energies. That the polarity or the dichotomy of energy is necessary so that both can exist. One can't exist without the other. So there's always going to be a shifting and a movement or changing of that balance. But it was never intended to get out of whack like it is today. And so these beings haven't been here a long time. Maybe driven off at some point, or maybe they chose to leave at some point, or reduce in numbers for some other purpose, and then came back again. And I think right now we're experiencing the return in mass, because they perceive that they're in a position to take over completely, where this had to be done over many, many years. I mean, you destroyed the planet one time, you have to rebuild the population. So mankind was given the ability to procreate and replenish the population after Atlantis or Lemuria or any of the major tragedies that hit this planet. And those are only the ones that we know about in our more recent history. What if you were to go back a 500,000 years? What are you going to find? And then we hear these stories. Well, this skull is 50 million years old. Who was here 50 million years ago? What was going on here? So we're not conscious of that. That's been kept from us intentionally because there is an obvious plot to take over this planet, despite its original purpose for having been created. So it's out of sync with universal law, and the negative, the demonic, the dark side has taken over, and maybe those that are here now are here to shift that matrix, to shift that reality back towards what it was to be before. So these beings have been here a long time. Now, I can't tell you with a certainty that they've always been here. They may have been driven off and came back, or they may have, as I already said, they may have decided they were going to go elsewhere. But I also strongly feel that this is going on in other parts of the universe, other parts of our galaxy, and other parts of the universe. There are probably some extremely dark places where this negativity is rampant. So that's my comment.
Well, in other words, so you believe they're here. I think that there is a negative influence here also. Now, the interesting thing, and we started to discuss this on one of the earlier shows, is but you brought it up again more recently when we were discussing the entities that were appearing around these spacecraft.
Yes.
It's very interesting that you have, you don't see, when these events occur, you don't see anything angelic, you don't see anything that we would interpret as beautiful or sensitive. It seems like you always see demonic entities, snarling beasts of different kinds, and all sorts of hideous things make their appearance in association with these events. And we've talked about that on previous shows, but what's interesting are the photographs that you were telling me about, where we take a picture of an ordinary crowd of people, and all of a sudden one of them doesn't look so normal. You know what I'm referring to, Don?
Oh, yeah. You're referring to the George Herbert Walker Bush picture on the aircraft carrier the day before he ejected from the plane and left his two comrades with no means of getting out of the plane to their death as it crashed into the ocean. And the picture... the source of the picture was from Otto Skorzeny, who was acquainted with Bush and also instrumental in setting up the CIA and had all kinds of historical connections with the Nazi Party and all the goings-on in World War II and thereafter. There is a manifestation in that picture next to his head. And it's a Polaroid picture, so this picture was not retouched by anybody. You can see it in the original Polaroid, and when you enlarge the picture and change the lighting a little bit, changing contrast and, you know, filtering it to compensate for the glare on the paper and that, this entity comes out very clearly. You can even see it has a crown on its head. Now, it looks like some kind of a smoke anomaly when you're just glancing at the picture. People tend to look at the people in pictures, and they don't study what is around them. But what became apparent when the picture was enlarged is this entity is right there. The very type of entity that you see when you're discussing reptilian shape-shifting. It's there. Now, there were accounts since that time that we're talking about a photo taken in 1944 on an aircraft carrier. And the three guys are standing together as buddies. Bush is in the middle, and next to his left ear is this manifestation. The head is, even with his head, looking at him. Now, you wonder, is this manifestation coming from him, or is it something with him? Is it there to monitor him, or to assist him, or to empower him in some way? I haven't really spent a lot of time considering that. It really doesn't matter, but it's the fact that that image is there, and that it has eyes and a nose and a mouth and ears, and it's very human looking in many respects, and it's very reptilian looking in many other respects.
Well, you know, when you tie all this together, you get some very interesting matters for contemplation. We started off talking about the movies and how the movies have various influences, and how Hollywood manipulates the truth in such a way as to make it appear as a fantasy, but in doing so enhances the fear factor. You remember about 15 years ago, they had a series on TV, and I think it was called V. And basically, it was about exactly what we're talking about, these reptilian invaders that came in saucers and had the ability to shapeshift and become human in appearance and walk among, you know, the earthlings with the intention of manipulating their politics and manipulating their science and their money systems. And, of course, anybody that was problematic for them, they just ate them. And, you know, that was a very popular series, and it went on for about 3 years. Matter of fact, the same guy who played I can't remember the name of the character, but Murders on Elm Street or something like that.
Oh, Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, Freddy.
That's Nightmare on Elm Street, yeah.
Yeah, he was one of the key characters in that V movie. And it's very interesting because that's something that was demonstrated as a sheer fantasy, and I'm sure most people interpreted it as such. But what if it had seeds of reality behind it? You know, what if it was based on more than what the average person assumes?
Well, yeah, they presented it as a phenomena that occurred when anyone went to sleep, whether it was the girlfriend or the boyfriend or, you know, the buddy across town that spoke on the telephone. They realized that it was when they fell asleep that this happened, as if that's a dream, or that's implying it's an illusion, because your dreams are all illusory, right? At least that's the presentation of Hollywood. So again, we see the mind control behind how it's presented. It's not to be taken as real because it's in a dream. Yet there are people who have prophetic dreams. And I mean, I'm one of them. Probably you too. You've probably had some prophetic dreams yourself, because you pay attention, you know, to the deeper meaning. But that manifestation, and it's definitely a shapeshifter. It's Freddy Krueger was a shapeshifter. He shifted into the friends. He shifted into other characters. And when they wanted him to be, you know, when they wanted the fear factor the highest, that's when they had to show him with his claws and his Cheshire cat grin and his burglar sweater, you know, and the fedora, you know. I mean, it's a very, very strange character that they picked. Like a, almost like a bum in the gutter. You know, no one ever found out what Freddy Krueger actually did, what kind of person he was. So they represented who he was in all of this strange attire and this strange appearance. And at attacking the person when they were at their weakest moment, unconscious.
Well, more to the point, though, than the Krueger illusion was the concept of the reptilians walking amongst us, you know, as is depicted in that series V. That brings a question to my mind, which, you know, I'm not sure how to interpret necessarily, and that is, you know, are these manifestations energy forms which come about as a result of the negative attitudes of some of these totally degenerate people who perform these acts? Or is it the other way around, the way some religions depict the situation, that a normal human being is in fact influenced to the point of degeneracy by these creatures from another realm? You know, that's kind of like the chicken and the egg problem.
Okay, well, you're bringing up the issue, I think, which one would have to question. Are these spiritual entities that are manifesting themselves somehow, or are they physiological beings? And I see them as a combination. I see them as physiological beings. In their reality, they would prefer to be reptilian. But their understanding of the science and their coupling with this negativity, obviously they're devoid of the higher spiritual frequencies. I think we would both agree on that. And if they're devoid of the higher frequencies, that means if they have any frequencies, they're of a lower nature. So the impact and their modus operandi is going to be reflective of the frequency. What frequency would cause someone to murder another, or to eat another, or to drink their blood, or to make a ritual out of sacrificing them? I mean, who's the sacrifice? The victim is making the sacrifice. you know, they call these sacrificial rites. Whose right is it? It's a right they're claiming, and they have to change the spelling of the word right. Even you know, but I'm saying that it's both physiological as well as spiritual, but not of a high vibration. In either case.
Well, that's certainly food for a lot of thought, you know, because I understand, and I've never seen these photographs, but I understand not only from you, but from other people I've spoken to, that there are actually many photographs that suggest something peculiar about some of the individuals in the picture. Whether they are actually shape-shifting and caught at a moment when they are between forms, or whether or not they have an evil influence behind them that somehow gets picked up by the photographic process. At any rate, there's apparently a lot of pictures like this, and the thing that's interesting about it is that you can't blame it on a photographic anomaly simply because of the fact that all the other individuals in the picture who are not accompanied by one of these negative influences are very clear and normal looking. And so, you know, photographs, if they're going to be screwed up, they're usually all screwed up unless there's something that can influence a very particular segment of the picture. And that's kind of unusual.
Well, you brought up a I was going to interject something here. You brought up a very good point here. You know, you have different types of cameras. They operate under different principles scientifically, but the end result is that you want to get a representation of the image that you're capturing. You want to retain that image so that you can go back to looking at it. Now, the camera does not have any belief system. Camera is made to do what it was designed to do. And it probably has some limitations put upon how well it does that. But at times, if the frequency is right, the camera will pick up certain vibrations and it will expose within the image anomalies that are there that we don't see with the ordinary eye. I would propose to you that we see it with the eye, but the mind does not see it. The programming and the conditioning has blocked the eye's ability to send that to the proper receptors in the brain. It's the word recognition. The eye, the human eye would function just like the lens of the camera. It has, the human eye in and of itself has no emotion. It's not the driving force. It's a tool, just like the lens is to the camera. However, the mind has got all kinds of obstacles or barriers placed in front of those receptors that what the eye sees doesn't go there. Now, that doesn't mean on some level we don't feel what's there. Our feelings have also been turned off. All of our senses, all of our five senses have been turned off. But we have a sixth sense. And that sense often enables the eye to see what the mind can't see. And as one becomes familiar with it, the mind automatically allows those images to come through, and you have understanding. With understanding comes knowledge, or with knowledge comes understanding, and there's no room for fear there. The two can't exist in the same place. You never have knowledge and fear operating within the same space. Never.
Right, I agree with that.
It's a fluctuation between the two. So this is why sometimes the camera catches it because of the frequency of the particular manifestation that's captured. This is why the frequency generated from Curlian photography, a Van de Graaff generator, will emanate frequencies that enable a camera to pick up more of those frequencies. That's why it'll pick up the aura. I who see an aura, I can see auras, and others that can see auras don't have that block there. So they're able to tune to the same frequency that the Curlian photograph is using, the Van de Graaff generator. It's just a matter of frequency. And the programming to block our minds or to create fear or to create illusions is all about frequency manipulation. That's all it is. Or frequency control. A siren on an ambulance or a fire engine or a police car. You see the fear. People's hearts start beating faster. They have to look. They stop what they're doing. It demands all their attention. The school bell is another example. And we have all types of signals like that we don't really pay attention to, but they're all frequency control. Even a stoplight, in a sense, is a frequency control. Or a stop sign. Now, you can say, well, it has practical use. Yes, it does, but not out on a country road where there aren't any people around for 100 miles. You know, you see that sometimes, too. You're driving down this road, and there's no one around for 100 miles, and there's a stop sign. So what do? You stop. It's just to remind us, or it's to kick, you know, to keep that person in that control state. This is the reptilians, and that's a reptilian feature, frequency control. They control our DNA. They can control their own DNA. They know DNA so well that they can mimic it. So they can mimic the appearance of a human being. It's a simple thing. Really, in a sense, I don't claim to be able to do that, but it's a simple process. Show me that I'm wrong.
Well, I have no intention of doing that, but what's interesting and leads right into what you're saying is the fact that I've witnessed this myself, that there are children who see certain things. They'll say, mommy, there's a man standing there in the living room. And the mother will look, and she won't see anything, and so she'll say, well, there's nobody there, darling. That's just your imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after 200 or 300 repetitions of this, then the child learns that that sensory perception is not reliable, or at least thinks it's not reliable, and it begins to shut down. But you see this same effect in animals. How many times have we heard stories where a person is sitting quietly with a dog or a cat, and all of a sudden the animal will start to react to something, right there in the room? There's something that they obviously can sense, and you can't see it, but you're grateful that they can see it.
Or sometimes, yeah.
Yeah,
sometimes
sorry,
we actually see it at the same time too. there are those.
Do you see it because they see it?
Sometimes it's a synchronistic event. I could be reading a book and I will look up and my dog will look up from a stone cold sleep and look up at the corner of the room and see a manifestation. And the first thing I do is determine the nature of it, and if I have to cast it out, I do so with great authority. And that could be anybody. That could be a remote viewer, somebody playing around with the energy. Okay? It could be a being from another realm. But before I jump to any conclusions, I'm going to discern what it is. And when you see the hair stand up on the back of your dog or a cat, cats are very psychic too. The cats sometimes will just freak out over, a negative entity. They know, they sense it, they see it. And really a person who's seeing it is just able, it's not a matter of having some special ability that's only available to them. It's that the obstacle is not in the way. Somewhere in the recognition process, whether that means that the synapses from left brain to right brain are connected or firing or what. I even think that it goes beyond the mental process. It's not even just limited to the mind.
Well, it's difficult to gauge those things, but I think we want to at least address one issue before we run out of time, and that is that if these entities are here amongst us, and if in fact they are influencing certain individuals, what is the net plan? What do you think the overall strategy is? I mean, If they want to do us harm on a mass basis, then they won't have anybody left to control. So there's got to be some intermediate, more practical explanation for their interference.
Well,
that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of us right now, and maybe on some level they didn't expect to have so many of us here. I think really the numbers, when you hear these stories, especially in the science realm and in the patriot realm, all these secret laws that have been passed, these signing statements for taking out large segments of the world's population. I mean, the UN is even behind this stuff. who are the people in the UN? Who are these people? These aren't just people from other countries that were brought over here. No, 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 no. Who is in our government? How can any country's government be so against their people? No, 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 no. These are not human beings we're dealing with here. That's the only answer that makes any sense. They can look like humans. They can dress like humans. They can talk like them. And if you really study things like pictures and you study the film and listen to their voices and their words, you know, cloning isn't something that was just brought up to be a sideline on headline news and talked about for a couple of months and dropped like a hot potato after Dolly the sheep died. How many times do you think they cloned other animals before they wanted to measure our reaction? And what kind of animal did they choose to present that to us? A sheep. An animal that follows, not a leader. You know, it wasn't a wolf they cloned. It wasn't a rattlesnake. It was a sheep. And you wonder why they call us sheeple. You know, there's a lot of symbology in that one example of cloning. Now, where did they get the ability to clone when they say they don't even understand what the junk DNA does? They were talking about this in O.J. Simpson's trial ad nauseum. This is junk DNA. We don't know what this is. How do you, if you don't know what it is or what it does, how do you know it's junk DNA? How do you know what it is at all? And I don't think we're even being told the truth there, because those that turned off our DNA through a variety of means, through food modification, genetic manipulation, through the use of toxic drugs that they call medicine, changing the makeup of water. Water is supposed to have two elements in it, hydrogen and oxygen, and it's got everything else in it but hydrogen and oxygen. It's not even safe to wash your dishes with it. It's contrary to the life of your dinnerware. I'm not even talking about eating off of it. I can take a sponge, a brand new sponge that used to last, you know, a reasonable amount of time. In a couple of days, it's worthless. Or a rag. And there are stains that don't wash out of rags and sponges because of what they're putting in the water. These are the methods that they use to alter our DNA. The things they're spraying in the skies. Even the things they tell us and the manner in which they disseminate the information in the electromagnetic fields. All of that has an impact on us, not to mention the dumbing down process in education, which has to be, it has to have a parasitic effect on our ability to even stay healthy. Because if you don't nurture a mind, it's worthless. So where can consciousness go to at that point? So these people are masters at manipulating our DNA. And they can only do that through the understanding of DNA, and it's through their understanding that they can do the shape-shifting. And maybe certain spiritual laws on the dark polarity, or on the negative end of the pole. That's my comment.
Well, that's quite a summation, because, you know, what you're inferring is pretty incredible. And then what we ought to really do is give some thought to why are they here? What do they want? You know, it's not, if it was just a question of conquering us, and if they have superior technology, then why don't they just fly down here and eradicate everybody? But they don't seem to do that. They prefer, you know, the more subtle infiltration approach and getting involved with everything. So unless they think in a manner that's totally different from our own, or else they want something totally unimaginable, you know, I can see why there's contradictions in the belief patterns that people have, because the things don't add up to anything that we can perceive.
Or what we perceive is so outlandish, you know. They always attack the messenger. They never attack, and that's to cause people to just discount all the information. If you attack the messenger, the source of the information makes the information invalid. That's the concept they use. They like to use great phrases like conspiracy theory. This is, if there's a group of people doing it together, it is a conspiracy. You know, there you can have a conspiracy to commit peace on this planet. Does that make it a conspiracy theory? You have people that are seeking peace on this planet together. That is a type of conspiracy. Conspiracy doesn't have to be negative. It's what the image they create, the illusion or the obstacles they put in front of us to interfere with our discernment, which comes from spirituality. It comes from the higher frequency. So what they do is they separate us by putting roadblocks in between the higher frequencies and where we are. We were created to move upward, not downward. And is the quality of life going up or is it going down?
Oh, it's very evidently going down. It has been for quite some time.
So that means our frequency is going down. Right? I mean, it's really not that complex if you think about it in that respect. And everything is frequency. Everything is light manifested or refracted and stepped down, transduced to a lower frequency until it becomes a solid, until it takes on a physical manifestation. I can tell you that the laws of physics in the fifth dimension are totally different from the laws of physics in the third dimension. And the fifth dimension will be a liberating type of physics and a liberating type of consciousness, allowing those that are experiencing that reality to truly experience free will. And all of this that we're talking about tonight is all designed to take away free will. So again, we have the two different frequencies, and where one will lead and where the other will lead. You see, I'm in a sense, Jim, and this is, I'm not aggrandizing myself, and I know this about you too, and I know this about many other guests that I have on this show. We're not trapped now in the third dimension. Those of us who see these things and have the courage to talk about it, we've risen out of that. We're outside the box. And we're moving towards that dimension to where eventually we'll be totally there. And the earth is moving there too. Now these guys are not going to be able to move with it. Not doing what they're doing. They're not going to be permitted to do it. So they're scrambling. Well, maybe if we get rid of all these people, maybe this will be our place. Maybe this is where we will be. We will continue to rule, and they'll be gone. But they're going to have to keep enough of us for their food. They need their adrenaline. They need to drink their blood. They need their sacrifices. Or they're going to have to go somewhere and start all over again. They're going to have to find another dumbed-down human race like is on this planet right now, and primarily, we're equally responsible for allowing them to dumb us down. But maybe it only takes a handful to shift that. I would say they're either going to destroy everyone or they're going to destroy themselves. Those that are going to move on are going to move on. But they're a long way from graduating to a higher plane. Long way. They're just the accumulative effect of the lower frequencies. That's all they are. There's power in that because it's the dichotomy of the higher frequencies. It's got to have power. You can't have power on one end and no power on the other, right?
That's for sure.
I mean, you know, if you have 5 volts of direct current on the positive end of the scale, you have negative 5 volts on the negative end. Although they're trying to take that 5 volts of positive current and add it to their 5, their negative 5, you see, and turn it into a negative. Not realizing that it won't work. Not in direct current. It'll cancel itself out. Where will they go? They'll cease to exist.
That's some really deep stuff there, my friend. You know, the thing that that I get out of it all is that we're back right where we were 2 weeks ago, talking about consciousness. You know, it seems to me that the ultimate solution to putting all this into a perspective that not only makes sense, but that is manageable, it depends entirely on our level of consciousness and what we're willing to do, you know, to improve things. If it's absolutely true that this government is influenced by creatures such as these, or if the other half of the situation is more plausible, you have dark entities that are directly influencing normal human beings. Either way, it doesn't matter. The net result is the enslavement of humanity, the milking of all of our best efforts for some other purpose rather than gratification of the people doing the work, and experimental purposes with our race. There's a whole mess of things that are being done, and we're just, when I say we, I mean in general, the human race is not responding the way you normally would expect. So the only thing that makes any sense to me is that the consciousness has fallen so low that it's causing people to be oblivious to things that they would normally react to. You know, like, I think we talked about this once before. I used to do experiments sitting at a counter in a restaurant, for instance, where I would deliberately crowd over into the space of the person sitting next to me. And sooner or later, you solicit a hostile response because you're invading his space. And that's how it should be. That's a normal thing. Well, you know, if we have all of these negative things happening, and they're designed, they're manipulated, they're planned, you know, people should be angry. People should react. And the irony of it is, if you don't, you're acquiescing to the situation. You know, you're actually helping it by doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And you know, the phenomena you were describing in the restaurant, we'll call that playing Space Invaders. I'm sure you've been in a line, maybe at a grocery store or a department store, and there's someone in front of you that, you know, I don't intend to imply any animosity toward the person, but their energy just does not resonate with you, and it's really a phenomenon of your auric body or your etheric body coming into contact with their etheric body, and there's not harmony. There's not even a similarity in any of the frequencies that would draw you to becoming a friend of that person.
Oh, now, no, people, it's absolute dissonance. I know exactly what you mean.
Yes. It's very unharmonious. And that person leans back while they're holding on to the handle of their cart, and you find yourself leaning back. That not because physically you see them moving, but because you feel that energy. You'll even change lines if you can find a a shorter line, or you might even go into a longer line just to get away from that energy. There are many, many people like that, and we have that ability in us to exactly perceive that. This is what we call instinct in animals when they sense danger. Well, they're sensing a series of events because they're seeing the astral plane. Many animals, birds especially, can see into the astral realms where this energy is. And often that energy is accompanied by other entities. You have a negative etheric body. I can guarantee you that if they're not within that etheric body, they're attached in some way and somewhere in the vicinity. And so it's not just the person. In fact, the person might be totally unaware that these entities are around them. They could be the most miserable person in the world, but they have the right to go to the store and buy their groceries. And yet, your experience now gets drawn into their energy. And many people discount that kind of thing, but they've all felt it. All the listening audience has felt some moment in time where they've had some experience being close to someone, just in the immediate vicinity of that person, and felt that discord that you described.
Well, I have a personal experience, which is ongoing, and I'm not going to mention any names, but I get along with people pretty well, Don, and I don't think I have too many enemies, but I do know that every once in a while I have an experience like the one you just described, and in my work environment there is an individual that affects me in that manner, and the odd thing about it is, I can't rationally tell you what it is. It's not like, oh, this person insulted me or this person, you know, is causing me some kind of distress. It isn't anything of the sort. But when this individual gets within a close enough radius to me, my skin crawls and I just can't be around it. I just can't be around that individual. And I've actually pondered upon this quite a lot because, you know, there is no social or physical explanation for it. So it's got to be something on a higher plane.
Yeah, the person, what I perceive of what you're describing is it's a person who is a psychic vampire and someone in some ways not to be trusted because the person is very envious of your abilities and your scientific acumen, your reasoning skills, your experience, your authority. This person, for whatever reason, it's their own personal issue, is very threatened. And you are sensing all of that emotion coming out. They're signaling you, okay? Much like the police siren signals you, okay? It it's having that effect. Yes, it's on another level, but it's not resonating with you. So it's on the darker side. And you feel it physically, don't you?
Oh yeah, I'm repulsed by the individual.
Yeah.
So,
well,
to me, that's a physical response for sure.
Yeah, you're feeling it on a physical level because it's a very low frequency, and what I just described to you, I don't know the particulars, but you could consider things that you've seen and experienced, and you probably see some truth in what I said.
Oh, I do, but I also see contradictions that I don't know how to explain. Like, for instance, without necessarily fingering anybody in particular, if we pick a really negative individual that's a public figure, and I actually have somebody in mind, somebody that I can't stand, I certainly wouldn't want to meet them, and yet what amazes me is that despite their true nature, which in my opinion is available for examination by anybody who is even mildly conscious. But yet despite that, they attract enormous crowds of supporters who somehow believe in what they're doing. And I don't understand that phenomenon, because the net result is going to harm the supporters as well as the rest of us. But for some reason, they are blinded and just feel that these type of individuals are demigods.
Well, I know who you're talking. I know who you're talking about, and I won't even mention the name. But let me just say that his support could very well be scripted out, just like all these movies we've been talking about. That what you see of the support is created for the purpose of creating this image, and that knowing full well that the others, in seeing the numbers and seeing the experience, in watching the movie or the illusion, are going to buy into it as if it has any substance to it. And this person you're talking about speaks with no substance, right? We're talking about the same person.
Probably. Sounds like it.
And this person is a senator.
Well, this person is definitely a politician. I'll go that far.
Okay. Yeah. I know who it is you're talking about. I could see the image before you even said it. But see, I'm tuning into your frequency. That's why I'm able to pick that up. Hey, you didn't know you were going to get a reading tonight on the show, did you?
No, but I don't mind. You go right ahead.
Well, I seriously think that we should be looking at this, and I talk about this to a big extent on the TNT hour that I do Wednesday afternoons, and we talk about it a lot on this show, that you're seeing things, folks, and you're seeing what they want you to see. That's the meaning of the word propaganda. That's the meaning of the word words mainstream media or news. It's not just one new, it's plural, news. What does that mean? What does that word mean? It's a word that really has no meaning, that has somehow over the years taken on a meaning because it's been showing us the program. They have TV shows. Now they just call them TV programs. That's it. It's a program. What is a program? It's a method created to achieve a desired result. Period. You know, when a band in elementary school is on the stage and you're all excited, you're going to see your kids play music. All the money you spent on lessons and instruments and getting them back and forth to learn how to play these instruments, now you're going to see the celebration. And they put on a program. It's planned. Everything that we see in public is planned. Everything we see over the airwaves is planned. And so the word program, TV program, it's right there in the words. It's planned for us. Now, when you're watching the news program and you're seeing these images and you say, how can all these people be supporting? You're not even thinking, I'm not criticizing you on this, Jim, but in general, people aren't even thinking, you know what? I just heard the lousiest speech in the world. Why are these people going crazy? He's not saying anything. Why are they acting like this is the return of the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show? I don't know if you remember that from years ago.
Oh, I remember it very well. As a matter of fact, I prefer to be watching that.
So you know, it's this idol worship. It's imagery. It's illusion. And you know, this guy opens his mouth and says, yes, I'm going to change America. Well, I'm alluding to the person now because I'm speaking in the words. But you're not going to admit I'm talking about the same person. So I'll let you off the hook. But what does that mean? There's no substance to that statement. In fact, you know, people are inclined to desire no change. They don't want to see things move out of their comfort zone. So if they're feeling uncomfortable, oh, he's going to change things. Well, then now we're led to believe that the change is going to make us happier, more fulfilled. When in reality, it's going to be worse than it is now. Because there's nothing else taking place that's positive from that source of media, from the news, from the people that are running the government, from the people that are making the laws, and all the supporting cast that goes along with it. There's no place for us to evolve spiritually or in our consciousness in that type of manipulation. That's total propagandized mind control is all that is. And you're seeing cause and effect, problem, reaction, solution.
And, well, I noticed one thing anyway, in these empty speeches, and it's not just that individual, it's a political trick that probably goes back at least as far as the Romans, and that is that even a speech which is not eloquent, and a speech which is essentially empty of content, what it will have in it, though, is buzzwords. And I noticed that if the overall speech makes no sense, but it's adorned with the proper buzzwords, people react to the grouping of these buzzwords much more so than the intellectual content of the overall statement. And I think that's what you're alluding to when you use that example of change. First of all, the change is never defined. So my take on the whole thing is that people hear the word change because it isn't defined and deliberately not defined. They immediately associate it with what they would like to see changed. They go, "Oh, good, he's going to change. It's going to change into this or that." But there's no guarantee that that'll ever happen. It's
well,
an
like
art.
You said.
It's an art that's designed to address the wishful part of the person rather than the intellectual part. And I think
isn't it an acknowledgement of what's called the American dream? Why do they call it a dream? Why can't it be the American fulfillment? Or the American realization, or the American consciousness. Why does it have to be the American dream? As if it's something, you see, our dreams, remember Freddy Krueger when we talked about Freddy? Freddy could only attack his victim when they fell asleep and they entered into a dream state, right? Okay, so
yeah.
The American dream is one of being totally unconscious. That's their dream. The American dream is a pun.
Well, interestingly enough, I always interpreted it as meaning, of course, I was interpreting it from my perspective, but I've always interpreted that to mean that it's a dream because everybody aspires toward, let's say, wealth, security, happiness, and those things. But not everybody gets it. And so that's what makes it a dream. In other words, everybody can dream of achieving those things, but not everybody makes it. But, you know, you bring up a very interesting point, and that is it should also be examined from the other side of the coin. And that is that, you know, their dream is a totally different one than ours. So
mm-hmm.
Now what you've managed to do, Don, is you've dragged relativity into the situation.
Oh, now I'm Einstein, huh?
No, I'm just saying that it's interesting that meanings or definitions can be relativistic depending on how you want to interpret it.
I got your point. I was just making another pun of it. I was being relative. Well, I know we're talking about the same individual. I mean, that's, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. The point here is we're not really attacking the individual. The individual is being played like a banjo, you know, like a Tennessee banjo. And what that means for those out there that aren't into metaphor and symbology, we are talking about someone who is fulfilling someone else's plan, someone else's role. We began this show talking about monsters and demons and aliens known as reptilians. We haven't gone into the grays at all, which are quite interesting. Maybe the next show we do, we can go into a discussion about the association between the reptilians and the grays. But
it's funny you should bring that up. I did have a very strong intuitive feeling about the grays. It didn't happen anytime recently, but a while back, and I was sincerely brought to an understanding at some level that even though they're alive, they're essentially an artificial life form which was developed, let's say, to serve another purpose. And almost the way we would build a robot to do some kind of a chore, perform some sort of chore, that the grays were essentially engineered genetically to serve a purpose. I don't think that they're a true race on their own. I just get that feeling, Don, but I can't prove it. And I don't know where I'm drawing the information from either, to be honest with you.
Well, I think the ones that are here primarily are the ones you just described. But I think they were modeled after another group of actual beings that do have a high intellect and do have a higher frequency. They come from a better place and would probably be a kind that's interested in us. Much like, think of Dolly the sheep. Okay? The question I ask myself is, if there was not a soul transmutation that occurred, what is the existence of that being? Why, what is the value in cloning a sheep? If it wasn't nature that produced this in a natural way through animal husbandry, And the attraction, it doesn't have to be love like people would have, but the attraction between two living beings, what are we talking about? Test tubes and amino acids and electrical charges and microscopes and, you know, where's the humanity or where's the spirituality in that? And is that in line with nature? I mean, we know the answer to that question. I'm asking it sort of rhetorically. So when you look at the grays, consider that the ones that are known to travel or be working toward the goals of the reptilians are what you describe them as. So almost like worker bees would be in a bee colony. Or soldier ants in an ant colony, carrying out a particular mission, and they just do what they've been programmed to do, and that's it. I've heard about too many accounts of a higher order of grays, and it's caused me to contemplate and deduce that there's probably some grays. They may be taller grays, but I also know that there are short grays and there are tall grays that are very evil, that have been made for the same purpose, and that are here. Many people have seen these. Many people have been abducted by them, and some people have fought them off. These are realities. Whether anyone wants to buy into this or not, you know, do the research and draw your own conclusions. When you've done the amount of research I've done and talked to the number of people I've talked to from around the world, and you hear the same story over and over with differences in the location and the circumstances and the participants, but the general same agenda going on in the background. Now, we mentioned reptilians. There's another hierarchy, or let's say there's a hierarchy in that group, and that's the draconians. And I wanted to come back to what we were talking about in the very beginning when you were talking about the werewolf and the concept of Frankenstein, and then we brought up Dracula. Dracula flew in terms of the movies and the stories that have been written over the years. Dracula always had the ability to fly, and he had a cape, and he had fangs, and he had an aversion to light. In fact, sunlight would destroy him. So, is this just to produce fear, or is this a reality? Is this a being that would live in the earth, or is sensitive to light and repulsed by the light, or fearful of being seen in the light? And can he fly? Well, the story about Dracula was that he could fly, or he could shift into a bat, or even a wolf. So there's a demonic flavor to that, and yet could Dracula not be really the draconian reptilians? I mean, Draconia, Dracula, very similar. And those would be the ringed reptilians. I was going to sound like Baba Wawa there. The winged reptilians would be like Dracula. In fact, the images I've seen of and some are ancient artifacts and paintings that go back thousands of years. They had wings that were very bat-like. They had folds of skin that looked like fingers, but they were webbed. Same image of the cape or Dracula turning into the bat. Any thoughts on that, Jim?
Oh, I've noticed the similarity many times. The inference, at least, that the cape, signifies a folded wing. As a matter of fact, there are a lot of the. I can think of one movie which I thought was very well done, where Frank Langella played Dracula, and in the scenes there where he transforms into a bat, the first thing that he does is he grabs the fringe of his cape with his hands and then pulls the arms into an upright position, which spreads the cape. Now there can be the symbology can't be any more obvious, but of course then they use special effects to transform them into a bat. But if we forget about the vampire thing for a minute, and even about Hollywood, there are lots of legends about creatures amongst us who can fly. One that comes to mind immediately is the Birdmen of Easter Island. You know, there was a whole segment on one side of Easter Island that talked about these Birdmen that would I don't know exactly how they fit into their mythology, but they apparently were very taken up with the fact that they were Birdmen at one time that would visit this island. Well, and then of course you have lots of sci-fi imagery that makes use of this bird concept. But and another thing that's important to consider too, we had talked about the fact that some of these entities may shift in and out of the physical realm, such that it could start off as an energy entity and manifest in the physical domain and then, you know, perhaps shift on out. Well, an entity that had enough of a developed consciousness and sufficient willpower could essentially create a body for itself out of the very ectoplasm that surrounds us all. And in doing so, it could create the body any way it wanted it.
Or it could be given a body.
That's right. There's a number of different potential explanations for that entire phenomenon. And I know for a fact that if you especially look in the Middle Ages, you see that there were an awful lot of demonic type creatures depicted with wings. And
gargoyles,
you know, it's very easy
gargoyles
and all sorts of things. It's very easy to say, well, you know, maybe they were on something or they were smoking some cheap stuff back then, you know. But the real fact of the matter is that a lot of times it's just the opposite. They were using some real advanced stuff. Now, this is something I found out from an alchemist friend of mine not that long ago, perhaps 4 or 5 years back. He told me some really amazing things. And this is a guy who I met here in the States, but who's actually from Europe. And he is a pretty well-known alchemist. And he's practicing the art openly. But what he was telling me was really pretty amazing. He said that during the Dark Ages, the availability of certain alchemical products was so intense or so prolific that almost anybody could get a hold of the stuff. And it altered their consciousness. And depending on the disposition of the individual, they would either see into a realm that was of a higher frequency or a lower frequency, but depending on who they were or what they were. And a lot of the people were just at such a low level of development that when they got a hold of some of this stuff, what they saw was the vibratory panorama that was suitable to their level of development. And a lot of it was pretty negative. Then they go and draw all kinds of pictures about it. But the interesting thing is, those people that were of a higher spiritual evolution were propelled to even higher levels by ingesting these alchemical substances. And supposedly, according to my friend at least, that's what actually led to the dawn of the Renaissance. And when the Catholic Church got a hold of this information, the last thing they wanted was an enlightened following, and so they did their best to stamp out the alchemists. But the point I was trying to make is that these entities have a consistent form about them. You know, it's not like you see some of them with six heads and tentacles or anything like that. They're almost always humanoid in form, with horns, reptilian type skin, and wings. And so after a while, you say, well, you know, if that many people are experiencing these in one way or another, can that be a coincidence? Can it be a coincidence that all these individuals draw them the same way? You know, things like that need to be considered.
Or the fact that it's been incorporated into buildings. You know, they use these to dress up the facades of buildings. I mean, why not use a turkey or a daisy? Why a gargoyle or a dragon or a lion with wings? You know, these manifestations are always very similar, like you're pointing out. And
well, not only that, but here's another interesting point for you, and I'd love to hear your take on this. If you notice that, at least if we go back to Europe, Where did you see that the most? On cathedrals, of all places.
Notre Dame in Paris is one place.
Yeah,
the city of London. All the financial centers have that, you see. And as Michael St. Clair said in a recent interview, this is a reptilian banking system on this planet. The reptilian central bank is how he referred to it. Very, very interesting comment he made.
Well, that's not only interesting, it can actually generate a shiver up your spine if you think about it.
Well, their system is an illusion, isn't it? The fiat money system is money made out of thin air. So how much fear do we have to give it? If you understand what the system represents, it shouldn't really create fear. It's just time for a new system.
I wasn't thinking so much of the system as its authors, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if they are truly the reptilian creatures that you're alluding to, you know, it makes you wonder if there isn't some office building somewhere where if you walked into it at the wrong moment, you'd happen into a meeting of reptiles. That would be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Someone told me an interesting story about a TV evangelist that they went to meet to show off an energy invention, and this TV evangelist in Virginia Beach met with him in a restaurant, and I may have told you this story before, but it's worth repeating for the listening audience especially, and we have to end this show pretty soon. We've done our first 2-hour show in a long time, unscheduled. The individual went with two friends, and the friends were asked to stand outside the restaurant while this evangelist sat at the table, and they talked about the invention. He looked over the paperwork and drawings and things like that, and the comment was made, yes, we want this. We want to pay you some money, and then we want to control this. We want to own this. And while the scientist was stirring his coffee, he looked up, and all of a sudden, the evangelist was a reptilian sitting there, and everything else in the whole restaurant became blurred and cloudy. And the conversation went on, although now he's looking at a reptilian, and no one else in the place is seeing this. And the individual is trying not to act unsettled or perturbed by this, but inside, you know, his guts are spinning like a washing machine on the final spin cycle. And he looks up, and then he looks back down, and he looks at his coffee, and he takes a sip of his coffee, and he looks down and looks up, and he's still a reptilian. And after what he described was 15 minutes, he decided that he wasn't going to turn this technology over to the evangelist. And he told him so, and he said, I'd like to go invite my friends in here now, you know, so we can eat lunch. And he said, yes, you do that. I'm going to go use the men's room. And the evangelist stood up and changed back into his original form. And I use the word original with reservation because I think that's his secondary form. And he went to the restroom, and all of a sudden all the people in the restaurant appeared again. Now he went outside and he said, well, that meeting didn't take long. You know, thank God it was only 15 minutes. He said, I would have hated to make an in-depth presentation and have it rejected. He wants it, but something told me not to do it. The friend said, 15 minutes? What are you talking about? You were in there for 2 hours. We've been standing outside waiting for you for 2 hours. He lost complete reality, complete track of time, and all he saw, basically, he knew there were people there in his consciousness, but he couldn't see them. It had been blurred out like a special effect in a movie. Totally.
Well, that's a pretty phenomenal story. It'd be interesting to find out which evangelist that was.
Well, maybe I'll next time we talk about this, I'll reveal the name.
Oh, you actually know?
I know the name, yes.
Ooh, that's pretty cool.
But it's enough for someone to contemplate this until the next show. Yeah, I will reveal the name. It's pretty interesting. Now, this, you know, this is third hand now. You're hearing it. You're hearing it from me through another person who was told by the individual that had the experience. But I'm stating it like it was described to me, and I have no reason to doubt anything because it fits all the other scenarios I've heard of this phenomenon. And it's not something everyone's privy to, but this has also been captured on videotape. In fact, Fox 11 in Los Angeles is very prolific at giving us shape-shifting images, particularly if someone has satellite, and there's a different type of filtering that goes on in the satellite transmission of a show. That's a bit different from someone watching it on an antenna, for example, or maybe through cable. Often these images get filtered out, but there was a time when satellite subscribers would see exactly in real time what was being broadcast, much like network affiliates would see. And these are on YouTube. You can actually see these shape-shifting videos. Just put Fox 11 shape-shifters in a search engine. You will be amazed at what you see. And I can tell you, there's not a photographic technique. There's not anything that the average individual will have to manipulate an image like this. It costs a lot of money for that type of special effect. And you can see it developing on camera, and you can hear the talkback from the producer and the director. You know, and they're trying to cover up what's going on because the director is yelling, you're shifting, you're changing. And they're mocking the way the piece was read as if that's the issue. Where in reality, they're worried that this has gone out on the airwaves, which it did. There's a guy, calls himself Archangel, and he's posted a number of these videos, and you'll see them shapeshift right on TV. It can be captured with a still camera, whether it's a Polaroid, a digital, doesn't matter. Hasselblad, Nikon, the brand of the camera doesn't matter. If the frequency is right, it's the right moment when you take that picture, you will capture the image. And you see the shifting. They go back to themselves. And usually there's some kind of emotion. What I pick up is that they need to be fed. It's feeding time. And they're losing their ability to hold that frequency when the attention is drawn into a certain emotional level. And I think that occurs because they're lacking what they need to maintain that frequency. Whew, that's a mouthful. Well, Jim, I'll give you a closing comment. We're going to have to call it a night here. We've made Seth stay over quite a bit tonight.
Well, the only closing comment I have is that it would be very interesting to dig into this more deeply. And as fantastic as it may sound, you know, if it's got a factual basis to it, then it's something that every conscious individual on the planet should be concerned about. And, you know, that brings us back to the same old story of let's get people involved.
Yeah, I think if we open up some minds and people look at the spooky movies and consider what we talked about tonight as what they're seeing is a representation of something that may very well be real in this realm, they'll see the spooky movies in a totally different light. In fact, they won't be afraid of them anymore. They'll begin to understand why these things are put in the movies, and they'll start to see the bigger picture. And it's very empowering to the individual to have that understanding. And some people are thinking, wow, these guys have been smoking some cheap stuff tonight. But you know, like you pointed out, we there's historical precedents here, too, that goes back thousands and thousands of years. This is nothing new, folks. Jim, it's been a pleasure, and I appreciate all your input tonight. And yes, we will come back to this next week. What do you say? We just continue where
sure,
we left
we
off.
Can, we can dig a little more deeply. What I'd really like to explore are the more modern manifestations of this stuff. You seem to have a pretty good source for that kind of information. I'd like to talk to you about that in private, and maybe we could dig into it more together.
Okay. We will do that. In the meantime, I want to wish you a great week, and we'll see you back on Evident Footprints next week. And I'll say goodnight to the listening audience and let you know we've got some great shows lined up for next week. Stay tuned. We're going to bring, they're not all scary. Some are very empowering and uplifting. Hopefully this was uplifting too, in a way. You know, when you confront your fears, realize that they're just delusions, you know, it changes your reality. Maybe we'll get into the multi-dimensional timeline aspect of this too, because it is a multi-dimensional thing. So, our guest tonight on Evident Footprints was Mr. Jim Murray, scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and he will be with us again next week when we continue this amazing discussion about the shadow government and other topics. And you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBS Radio. Special thanks to Don Newsom and Seth Hendrick. Seth, don't be angry at us for keeping you up so late. At least we kept you out of the fires. By the way, folks, please pray for the folks in Northern California. Pray for their safety, of their towns and their families and their homes and their businesses. And we'll see you all next week. Have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.